You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom-targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly opportunity to answer questions about all and sundry, or share a comment. If you've got an experience in the health realm, either with a natural product that we talk about here in Intelligent Medicine, or perhaps some type of medical experience that will be of interest to your fellow Intelligent Medicine listeners, send it to questions@drhoffman.net. Okay, so what's next, Leila?
We've got a question from Gary. I don't know the truth or falsity of it, but have heard that in the old days, marijuana had about 2 to 3% THC content. By contrast, the marijuana today is said to have somewhere on the order of 15 to 25% THC. I'm not a user myself, but I wonder if you see any public health concerns.
Well, absolutely I do. I absolutely do. And, full disclosure, I went to college in the 1970s and pot was rampant. And at a pretty early age, I was exposed to it. And I have to say that it was pretty strong then. Sometimes it could be downright disorienting to be smoking pot. And, the concern is that through selective breeding, they're always working to improve the product.
Yeah.
With
different
all kinds
strains of
different
it.
Strains, and they've amped up the THC concentration to significant double digits, and so I cannot imagine how that would affect the coordination, the thinking, the driving ability, especially of a young person at an age where their brain is developing today. I mean, fortunately, I had a little bit of a hiatus because I understand that, junior high school and, high school kids are smoking pot, or they're taking edibles, or they're vaping THC. Mm-hmm. In unprecedented numbers. And, this is a time of brain development. And, I have a concern about what that does to brain development. This is also a critical age for the development of mental illness. And, like young kids are having problems concentrating, they're losing learning opportunities. And also, they are at an age where there's a higher risk of developing schizophrenia. And, for someone who might have some predisposition, maybe it's genetic, maybe it's environmental towards schizophrenia, this is like Russian roulette. It's kind of like rolling the dice on, whether you're going to develop a lifelong mental disorder, in my opinion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And,
especially frequent use of it, chronic use of it, right?
Yeah. And it's one thing, occasional recreational use, like you want to go to a concert or something like that. Okay, fine. And, you're an adult and, maybe you have a designated driver, because I'm pretty sure that driving while on high THC marijuana, you're going to have a change in your ability to operate machinery.
I have to say, I'm a little troubled There's alternate side of the street parking on my block. I am blessed to have a garage. I don't have to worry about that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But my neighbors, however, who are renters, I smell a lot of skunk up and down my block.
Yes.
And it's particularly troubling that I smell it in the morning. And then people are parking their cars. They're doing their alternate side of the street parking.
Yeah.
Really, it's very troubling.
Yeah.
To see this.
And the fact that it's in the morning suggests that for some people it's an eye opener. You know, it's like that.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that gets you, steals your courage to face the day. That is, you know, I mean, they say that it's not addictive. It certainly is habit forming. And I think the science does show that for some people that there's a dependency that develops, you know, that you kind of need that.
It could be. Yes. Maybe it's not physiologically addictive like heroin or morphine or something like that, where the withdrawal is terrible, but it could be psychologically addictive.
So, you know, it's kind of a dilemma for me because, you know, if my parents had said all this stuff to me at that time, I would have just brushed it off. You know, I would have just said, you know, you're just old fuddy-duddies. You know, yeah, you like to go to your cocktail parties. I have my own way of relaxing with a mind-altering substance. But I got to say that, you know, legalization is a way of condoning it. And, you know, I don't think it should be condoned. I think it should be.
And for states to pick up more revenue via taxes.
That too.
That's what I think it's about more than anything.
In effect,
expense.
They're partners in crime. You know, it's like all the vices, you know, alcohol, gambling.
They're aiding and abetting.
They want their VIG. They want their piece of the action. You know, they're all struggling with, you know, unprecedented deficits. And so they, you know, want a piece of that huge multi-billion dollar business. And so they're legalizing it, but, you know, a lot of people are just getting it illicitly. And then illicitly, I mean, there's the other problem. It's like, you don't know what's in it. You know, maybe it's spiked.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, I came to marijuana kind of late in the game.
Yeah.
I was already
You're 20s. A musician. You're a musician. So that's the
I'm
kind
a musician, but for me, it was more about alcohol and stuff like that.
Sure. Yeah.
It wasn't really drugs, but in my 20s, I dabbled a little bit in marijuana with my then boyfriend, you know, my cousin at the time, things like that. And all I remember is paranoia and extreme hunger in that order.
Right. Well, so there's an interesting thing about that is, you know, just like with alcohol, there are different reactions based on different personality types. And people who have a little bit of low-level anxiety to begin with, and I would place myself in that category. I'm not a chill person, and perhaps you're not. Although, you know, now you maybe we seem very.
I'm more so as I get older than when I was younger.
I think that's it's a feature of maturation. But I agree with you that it can heighten anxiety. So, for example, you know, we would get stoned, and then of course we would get hungry. We would get the munchies, and then we'd go to the 7-Eleven to score our munchies, you know, usually junk food. That's another aspect of that. You lose all discretion when it comes to food choices, right? So we would get
all inhibition is gone. You're just hungry.
Yeah, we would get our candy or whatever. And I would be, you know, at the counter, you know, fumbling with my change because in those days there were credit cards. And I would be acutely aware of the stare of the cashier at me as I fiddled with my money, trying to remember how to count out, you know, $1.25. And then worst case scenario, an off-duty cop would come in, you know, like, and it would be like, oh my God. And it would be like that paranoia, like that cop knows I'm stoned. And oh, by the way, I've got a joint in my back pocket. And I'm going to get, you know, I would go down a whole cascade of events. You know, I'm going to get arrested. I'm going to go to prison. You know, I'm going to be, you know, my parents will be, fit to be tied, you know. And of course, the moment would pass. People are far more oblivious of you than you think. But it can make you paranoid and self-conscious.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So if the THC content is indeed higher than it was, it's like making the wheat crop in America more glutinous.
Yes.
Than the wheat crop in Italy.
That's a good analogy.
You know?
That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Because it makes a chewier bagel, you know, like, right? But do we need that much THC? I mean, is more better? I don't know. I mean, and, you know, I just worry about what the effect is on, you know, the coming generations with this. And it's just an absolute disaster. I think when a woman who's pregnant smokes pot, I think that is a recipe for trouble.
Yeah. I worry about apathy in these upcoming generations who are using this regularly. Apathy, not having the initiative to do anything. I mean, when you're on a substance, that's basically it.
This much I'll say, though, is when I get together with my college friends, which I sometimes reunite with them, and we kind of laugh about it, you know, that, we were smoking pot and, you know, trying to write our term papers and trying to pass exams and stuff. And most of us are successful, you know, doctors, lawyers, executives, and you kind of made it through. And I liken it to a kind of an obstacle course. If we made it through that obstacle course while pretty impaired, you know, we could deal with anything. You know,
right.
And full disclosure, I haven't touched it for, oh my God, maybe 50 years now, 50 years, because I stopped in my 20s. Yeah. I stopped in my early 20s.
Yeah, not since my late 20s, I remember. I said, okay, that's enough. There's only so much. I'm tired of looking over my shoulder. This is ridiculous. There's nobody there.
I'm trying to increase my mental acuity. I'm not trying to scramble my brains. You know, I think there's an age where, you know, you value clarity and mental acuity.
Absolutely.
And you're not trying to alter your consciousness in that way. Yeah. And same thing with alcohol. Same thing with alcohol. Like, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's not the same anymore as when you're 28 or even 38 or something like that. It's nice to be able to sleep through the night.
Yeah.
And have a good night's rest and feel, you know, not feel like a wet blanket in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, just feel good all around, not be puffy and all of that and tired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feeling good is the way I get high these days.
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Anyway, so that launches
the
long discussion.
So, Gary, there's the long answer to that. There's the long discussion to that. Dr. Hoffman, it may be a good time to take a break for one of our sponsors. What do you say?
All right. Let's do it. Whether you're a nutrition enthusiast or simply an individual looking to improve your well-being, check out this comprehensive new course from the American Nutrition Association, Getting Started with Personalized Nutrition. It's a self-paced one-hour course with video, reference sheets, and more, all with the goal of helping you harness the power of personalized nutrition. You'll learn how to optimize your energy levels, support your mental clarity, improve your GI function, enhance your physical performance, and maintain your metabolic health. The course is regularly $49, but as an Intelligent Medicine listener, you can get access to this vital content for just $29. Just go to the ANA.org/Hoffman. That's the ANA.org/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman29 for the exclusive discount. The ANA believes personalized nutrition holds the greatest potential to solve the chronic disease epidemic. Just go to the ANA.org/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman29 for the Harness the Power of Personalized Nutrition course. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. We vet them very carefully. And we, as they sometimes say in political ads, I approve of this message. We approve of these messages. Okay.
Right.
Let's get back to questions. What's next?
All right. We have from Vic. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. Could you please talk about the issue of microplastics, especially being found in brains, you know, of on autopsy? Why is it so prevalent? Is it dangerous? What can we do about it?
Okay, so I wrote a big article on this, and lately this issue has been really platformed by folks like Kelly and Casey Means and RFK in the MAHA movement. You know, which really speaks to the level of environmental pollution, but it's kind of like a new form of pollution, which is forever pollution, because plastics don't break down. They get smaller and they become microscopic, so small that they can be absorbed via the digestive tract and the skin into the bloodstream. And the brain is uniquely protected from harmful substances by something called the blood-brain barrier. And the fact that they have found plastic in the brains of cadavers is very alarming, because it suggests that the particles are so tiny that they can even traverse the blood-brain barrier, which keeps out a lot of harmful substances. So, you know, they must be infinitesimal. And, you know, we can go on and on about the sources, but, you know, you drink from a plastic bottle, you know, just simply breathing the air, because they're aerosolized, they're in, they're bioaccumulated in fish, because the oceans are full of microparticles, and it's a problem. And the only way to solve it is to decrease the input, which is to get away from plastic. Now, that's easier said than done, because so many of the things we rely upon are plastic.
Oh my goodness.
But we need to find biodegradable equivalents that actually break down, you know, like wood or paper, you know, that previous containers. I mean, it used to be they give you, you know, paper bag, you know, for stuff.
Yeah. And paper bag, little wax paper wrap for your sandwich rather than a plastic baggie. Uh-huh. Or something like that. It's hard to avoid. You really have to take notice.
And another source of this, interestingly, is clothes, new clothes. I mean, some of the new clothes, and I love these new fabrics. They're amazing. Remember when they first came out with like vinyl clothing? You know, I remember I had, when I was a freshman in college, I went to Alexander's, which is a department store that's now long defunct.
I remember Alexander's.
And, and I think for $29.95, I bought myself a winter coat. I was a kid from California, and I didn't have a winter coat, and it was a Naugahyde coat, and it kind of, you know, it kind of squeaked when I walked, you know, made a sound, and it was, it was like very kind of rigid plastic, but it, you know, if you've layered underneath it, it kept the cold out. You know, it weighed about 2.5 pounds. But so now, fast forward to now, they have these wonderful fabrics. So instead of blue jeans, you can get these great pants that, you know, stretch and look great and, you know, easy to wash and make fast drying and they don't shrink.
Yeah, wash and wear the synthetics. The oh, my goodness.
And they're cheap. And they're cheap. But
they're cheap. You could save on a dry cleaning bill, which is a whole other set of toxins.
But they're made from recycled plastic bottles.
Yeah. Yeah. They got to do something with all those plastic bottles.
And so what happens when I outgrow them, or, you know, I'm too tired of them and I get rid of them? They don't break down like Levi's, you know?
No. Or wool, for that
matter. I mean, I think the first Levi's that was made, you know, during the California Gold Rush by a guy named Levi and Strauss, like the two guys. Instead of, they couldn't find gold, so they decided to go into the clothing business. And they made blue jeans, and they dyed them with indigo. They made them out of cotton. There's like one of the original ones. It's like in a museum, but it's so fragile that you have to wear like gloves to handle it, because it's, you know, like 150 years old.
Oh my goodness.
That kind of stuff biodegrades, but plastic clothing is forever.
Yeah. Kind of like styrofoam. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's so much wrappers and things that come, you know, with the packaging. Oh, my God.
And now with convenience foods, even our vegetables are chopped and placed into plastic containers.
Yep, exactly.
So even, you know, when you're getting off the train or the bus after work and you're thinking of all the food prep for dinner, so much of it is prepped for you and it's in these single serve containers or enough for you to just take it out and plop it down. They're all in plastic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Labor saving things, you know.
Thank you, Vic, for your question.
It's a problem. You know, we're going to keep on it. It's an issue that I wrote a newsletter article on, was about 6 weeks ago. So look it up. You know, go to drhoffman.com and scroll down on the read. There's a prompt
the read,
on top.
Pull down menu.
Read pull-down menu. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you can scroll back for a few weeks and, you know, maybe not all the articles appeal to you, but there may be some there that, you know, even something 6 months, 18 months old, you know, is quite valid and
continues
to have legs.
It's a great resource.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We've got a question from Lois. Why does your foundation formula use ascorbic acid as vitamin C when that's synthetic or it's not that significant? Foundation formula, Dr. Hoffman. That's a formulation you used to have made.
Yeah. So I used to make my own vitamin line, and I had, you know, a few offerings. I had an EGCG product. I had something called PhytoGuard. And this was stuff that is mostly from the 90s and the early 2000s. And, you know, foundation formula, I think, is not around anymore. So you might have an old bottle. So lately,
and it was the multi.
Yeah, it's a multi. It's like, I think it's a great name, foundation formula, because it had, you know, it's kind of everything you need, soup to nuts.
It's foundation.
And so now I recommend a good multi from Fullscript, which is our online dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. It's called Alpha Base. And it's like, you know, like the alphabet, A to Z and everything in between, you know, all the vitamins, minerals, and, you know, cofactors in one. So here's this. Let me explain why I don't make my own vitamins anymore. Number one, it's an economy of scale. So a company like Ortho Molecular makes tens of thousands of bottles involving millions of capsules. And as much of an outreach as I have, I mean, I can't manufacture that many things and sell them. So I did that for a while, but there's an economy of scale. So it might be 30% less if you order 1 million versus 100,000 capsules, which translates to maybe, you know, 1,000 bottles, you know, and the minimum order, they won't even make you an order smaller than, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 bottles. You know, they just won't bother because it's the production run is expensive to set up and, you know, the labeling and all that stuff. And so, you know, I could say, look, make me, you know, 10,000 bottles, okay? Which could last for 5 years at the rate that I sell. But A, it would reach an expiration date. It wouldn't be fresh. And B, with something that has like 20 or 30 ingredients, like a foundation formula, it has everything in it. Nutritional science is proceeding at a pace where the innovations are coming fast and furious. So what I decide to put in it in 2010 might be completely different by the time we reach 2013. You know, there might be some new innovations about a better form or something that is missing from it, or that maybe we shouldn't be so high on something because there's some new findings that too much say, well, I don't know, manganese or something, we want to cut back on it. We used to put a lot of manganese and things, and now we think, well, maybe manganese is an essential thing, but there's manganese toxicity, so let's cut back. And so it's one thing to have one supplement, like even niacin has been, you know, we talked about it in part one, controversial. But when you talk, you multiply the controversies by dozens when you have a lot of ingredients. So let's speak to the calcium. First of all, I think some people
the ascorbate,
Yeah, it's an issue, I think, of scientific literacy, which is natural versus synthetic. The vitamin C that you find in an orange is chemically identical to vitamin C that's made in a bat. I'm sorry, it's true. It is true. I mean, that's the science. That's the biochemistry of that. The advantage of a natural form, say, like you're going to get a rosehip extract. Well, you know, you'll get the vitamin C, which is chemically identical to vitamin C made in a vat, but you might get some additional substances like bioflavonoids, which are present in rosehips. Okay. But there are different forms of vitamin C. There's ascorbic acid, which is the cheapest form. And ascorbic acid has the disadvantage that it is a little caustic. It's acidic. And so it's going to cause more GI side effects. But at the dosage that you put into a multi, that's not a problem. At, it's you know, as a standalone.
And if you take that with food, it's not a problem at
all. Yeah. So as a standalone, you might want to take a buffered vitamin C, like calcium ascorbate, which is the form that they use
In AlphaBase.
In AlphaBase. But,
it's calcium ascorbate.
And so they have the ability to turn on a dime. You know, they may say, well, you know, next time we do it, we're going to use, instead of folic acid, we'll use methylfolate, which is a more bioavailable form. Or maybe instead of vitamin pyridoxine hydrochloride, we'll use P5P, which is a more bioavailable form of vitamin B6, and so on, you know, the so-called methylated vitamins. And instead of cyanocobalamin, maybe we'll use methylcobalamin. You know, that's those are the kind of changes that have occurred lately in multivitamins. So I don't make the vitamins anymore. And I leave it to the really big, reliable players. Oh, here's the other thing. They have laboratories where they can inspect the ingredients. Okay. So when they get a shipment of like a big vat of vitamin B12, they can assay it for the potential to have impurities or toxins. And if it really is the B12, or if it's, you know, got some fillers, does it, you know, when it purports to be 100 micrograms, it is really delivering, you know, 32 micrograms. But they have in-house testing capabilities that where they've invested millions of dollars. I had to rely on the say-so of the companies, and I did require a certificate of authenticity on all the ingredients that I used. But then again, I wasn't the one testing it. You know, all the supplement companies, they get a certificate of authenticity, and then they say, trust but verify, and then they verify it, okay? And that's what the big companies do. But the smaller, you know, like some fly-by-night discount companies, you got to be careful because they may be cutting corners and they may not be doing quality control. So was that an adequate answer to that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I would think so. Lois, we hope you think so. So there you go. Ascorbic acid is still something. It is not insignificant. It is vitamin C.
Yep.
So, yeah. And AlphaBase on FullScript is what is recommended.
Yep.
Absolutely.
As a multi. Yeah, that's my recommended.
As a multi.
Then that's what I take. Okay. That's what I take personally.
Terrific. Okay. Oh, we've got a comment here from Daniel who wrote to us last week. He was writing that he was at the dentist getting implants, and he was told that his bone health was fine and that it was soft. Well, Daniel wrote us back, said, I took your advice. I contacted my primary care, and they've ordered a DEXA scan.
Okay,
so
good.
He's going to be following that way.
Yeah, because there's not necessarily a correspondence between what's happening in the mouth, if indeed that's true. And what's happening in your hips and your spine. I mean, it may be an indication, but it is not the most, it's not a hallmark of osteoporosis throughout the body. If indeed it's true, I mean, this is the dentist's impression of maybe looking at an x-ray or fiddling around in the guy's mouth, you know.
Okay. So, Dan, great. Thanks for letting us know what's happening and your DEXA scan, and best of luck with all of that. All right. Hoping your implants are working out as well. Okay. Let's see here. Oh, we've got a question.
Yeah, we have time for one
We have time for one more.
Yep.
From Bob. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. As a listener from the beginning of your broadcasts, I've been taking resveratrol for many years, mm-hmm. and specifically the Longevinex brand.
Right.
However, listening to your recent podcast with Chris Mirabile, CEO of Novos, I'm wondering if I'm wasting my money on it.
Yeah.
Essentially, he seemed to say that there's been no study proving resveratrol's effectiveness in human beings. Is there something else that's better?
And he was a very, very sharp guy. And, you know, I had to say at the end of it, I said, you know, I saw your pitch, you know, you're a longevity expert, and, you know, I thought mm-hmm. it'd be interesting to discuss this with you. And I told him, I said, you significantly overperformed. I mean, I came in with modest expectations, and he is really a brilliant guy with very precise and discerning knowledge about longevity, what works, what doesn't work, what has potential. And we had a very nice, nuanced conversation. So if you want to, what was this last name? Chris what?
Chris Mirabile.
Chris Mirabile. Mirabile. And, you know,
yes.
he wasn't selling anything, you know, so it was interesting. Here's the thing. Lately, I think the bloom is a little off the rose on resveratrol. The story of resveratrol is like, you know, when they looked at the French paradox and they said, oh, look at the French, and they smoke Galois and they eat pâté de foie, and yet they have the best heart cardiovascular outcomes of anywhere. And they thought, the reason is they drink a lot of Pinot Noir, which is rich in resveratrol. Mm. So resveratrol became a thing. Now, on that premise, a very prestigious longevity expert named David Sinclair sold a proposition to GlaxoSmithKline. And for $900 million, they created an entire lab to study the potential of resveratrol. Mm-hmm. But what they wanted to do is they didn't want to use old-fashioned resveratrol. They wanted to tweak it and turn it into a patent medicine that was going to be a longevity drug, and it was going to have a lot of applications for, say, cardiovascular disease and, you know, all and sundry because of its benefits. That whole proposition crashed and burned, and it ended up being kind of rancorous because they said, you know, you sold us a bill of goods. We want some of the money back. And he said, basically, you know, that's science, you know, you pays your money and he takes your chances. So, you know, he's still a very plausible voice in the longevity field, but he's kind of back a little off of longevity, off resveratrol. So the idea is that resveratrol promotes sirtuins. Sirtuins are the same thing that may be triggered by fasting and caloric restriction, which is one of the demonstrable strategies for extending life, except that it's no fun at all.
No, it's no fun to be hungry.
Right. So it'd be nice if we could just take a pill that conferred the same benefits. Well, I'm a fan of other podcasters because, you know, I like to get information. And, you know, listening to myself is, you know, not that beneficial because I already said it. So I listen to other
podcasts. You know what you said. You don't need to listen back.
Yeah. And lately there's one of my favorite podcasters, Peter Attia, who I don't always agree with. I take issue with him on a lot of things. But he is a very rigorous scientist. And he evaluates studies with, I think, a great deal of precision. Although a little bit of a bit of an anti-supplement bias, kind of a skepticism about supplements. But he's open to some. But when it comes to resveratrol, he points out that, you know, one of the biggest studies that looks at the potential of various substances to enhance lifespan, it's a rodent study where it's called the ITP, where they test various things. And they found that certain things enhance the longevity of rodents. By the way, astaxanthin is one of the things that seemed to enhance the longevity of rodents, interestingly. among natural substances. Well, resveratrol struck out. So, by the way, did metformin. Wow. But I think metformin may have potential in humans because, you know, most humans aren't rodents. I mean, I know a few, but most humans, 99% of humans aren't rodents. So the what he says is that to accept that resveratrol works, number one, you'd have to take massive amounts of resveratrol. And they've actually done some animal experiments where they gave animals the equivalent of like a hockey puck of resveratrol every day, like a, you know, 8 ounces of resveratrol. And we give it, you know, 500 milligrams a day. And it just didn't do anything. It didn't do anything to the animals. And so resveratrol, now, we're talking about longevity. There may be health benefits to resveratrol. Okay. This guy who I interviewed, Chris Mirabili, believes that something that works better than resveratrol is tirostilbene. Tirostilbene is now touted as an anti-aging ingredient. And he says it's kind of downstream metabolite of resveratrol in the biochemical pathways. And there, he believes there's some plausibility for tirostilbene. It's spelled like pterodactyl, P-T, tiro, patiro, but the P is silent. So it's tirostilbene. And so I don't know. I still do take it. I take it in a form where it's teamed with quercetin. And that's the Longevinix formula, but I take now another formula that has quercetin, and I think the bona fides of quercetin are certainly there for health. You know, but I'm a little less fixated on resveratrol as an anti-aging panacea kind of thing. But, you know, I have an open mind, and it may be that other health benefits will be discovered, but, you know, simply to say that something doesn't make you live longer does not necessarily mean that it doesn't impact health span. I'm sorry.
True.
Health span as opposed to lifespan.
Yes. Yes. And the best place to get your resveratrol, lest anybody try to rationalize, you know, drinking red wine on a daily basis, not the thing to do. Mediterranean diet or not, it's still neurotoxic. That's not the place to get the resveratrol. The amount of resveratrol that was given in these rodent studies would be equivalent to 50 bottles of wine.
Yeah, so something like that.
Ridiculous.
Right.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to take it in a supplement.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah. So, right. So I think that whole French Connection thing is kind of passe. I remember I sat down with the folks at ABC on 2020 once. Remember that show 2020? I don't know if it's still on. I guess not.
Yeah.
Oh, it's still on?
I don't think it's on.
Okay.
No, it's not still on.
There was a show 2020 in the 90s, and I sat down and I discussed the French paradox with them. Where, you know, as a nutritionist in the 90s, because that was a thing, the French paradox, you know.
Totally. And especially the southern regions where it was even fattier, the food was fattier, you know, all of that, the French paradox. So that's when fat was a foe. It is no longer.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Okay, so reminder, D.R. Hoffman's story, and we talk about these esoteric supplements. That's a place to go, drhoffmanstore.com. That's my FullScript dispensary. We get our supplements through FullScript. They have fast, free delivery. They have a wide assortment of products and, also with my product recommendations there. And, that's where you get your stuff as well.
And a reminder to everyone, you could email your questions to Q&A with Layla to questions@drhoffman.net. We appreciate them.
Okay. So, you know, stay cool, stay calm, stay collected. Don't let your, amygdala get too much in overdrive this week, because I think that's where the both campaigns are going now. It's like, forget the frontal cortex, let's go right to the limbic system and like, mm-hmm. you know, go to the amygdala, which is the fear center of the brain, and let's make our final appeal. So
vote. Take some deep breaths, everybody.
And vote with your forebrain, please.
Yes, please.
And we'll pick ourselves up in the aftermath of that next week. I don't think we'll know the outcome by then, but maybe the subsequent week, or maybe in January 2025. Who knows?
Remains to be seen. All right. Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news, and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.
This is Layla Mudin, registered dietitian nutritionist. I maintain a private practice and see patients regularly. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone and telehealth consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.